It's Bob McCallum. It's John Shannon on the podcast / radio program.
Hello, Robert.
For this, good morning, John. For this, or afternoon, as the case may be. What day is this? Wednesday?
Yes, it is.
I don't know about you, but and perhaps it's the advancing age, Alzheimer's kicking in, something. Holiday Mondays throw me for a loop. It takes me a few days to figure out what day of the week it is.
And yet, what people don't know is that we actually taped two shows on Monday, and the producer gave you a day off yesterday.
Thank you to the producer.
I'll pass that on.
Whoever that invisible entity might be. What are you drinking? Are you drinking coffee?
Big black coffee. Oh yeah. Do we have Nespresso as a sponsor?
We don't have a coffee sponsor.
We need a coffee sponsor. Nespresso is excellent.
No, you need a coffee sponsor so that you can have your fuel.
Absolutely. How many cups of coffee do you drink a day?
None.
How much tea?
One.
Do you? Oh, no. I have to have at least five.
I used to drink more. Well,
I'm a five cup guy.
When we did the program from 4 to 7, and you experienced this, I often would have 2 or 3 mugs of tea an hour.
Well, yeah, I know. And there would always be this during the commercial break.
Yeah.
You tapping on your cup and.
Yeah, because I wanted tea.
The service department looking after you, and then them not being able to find milk, and then stomping down to the other fridge to find milk.
Oh, I know.
It was hell.
It was hell. Everything about it was hell.
Particularly the 4 to 5 hour, right?
Not the least of which was the search for tea.
Hey, did you see? Listen, our buddy Gretzky. People are listening to us.
Yeah.
Going to Turner today.
Yeah.
They announced it today.
And I guess I should ask you this because you hang out in Edmonton a fair bit. He pretty much had to resign his position with the Oilers in order to accept the position with Turner, right?
No question.
Right. Yeah. Because it would be perceived as a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
And it would be a conflict of interest, essentially.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
But I guess the question becomes, did he want to get out of Edmonton or not?
No. He has a tremendous amount of loyalty to Daryl Cates and to Bob Nicholson. It was pretty good. It was a pretty good situation for Wayne there, Bob. He didn't have to live there. He got to give his counsel anytime he wanted. They would phone him up and say, please come in for a couple of days to talk about things and do some, handshakes for us. And other than that, Wayne was living wherever, whether it was at Sherwood, whether it's in St. Louis now, but this was the exact thing we talked about the day Turner got the deal, is that they needed a big name and they got Wayne Gretzky.
I've seen a few articles on Wayne's decision to go there and Turner's decision to recruit him. Mm-hmm. As a longtime producer, in most cases, the ability to assess talent, will Wayne Gretzky be good at this job?
Well, we've talked about this before. He will be if he lets his guard down. As you know, and we had Wayne on 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
He intimated at the end that he really didn't want to work for a team anymore full time, like coach or manager, but that didn't discount television. But Wayne is one of the most guarded people we've ever been around. In fact, I would tell you that he created his own language that has been propagated by 2 more generations of hockey players. You know, Sidney Crosby speaks Wayne. Connor McDavid speaks Wayne. Wayne created a non-confrontational style of making it sound like he's giving a comment without giving a comment. Hockey speak. But if you know him privately, and you do, Wayne has a great sense of humor. He has a really, really sharp tongue. And he has a very good analytical mind for the game of hockey, as he, which is no surprise to anybody. If he's able to do a little bit of that on the air, he will be really good. Really good, because he does bring the name to the table.
Well, we shall see soon enough. I don't have an opinion on it. As you said, I've been around Wayne in social settings and professional settings many times, as you have. And we are
great
aware.
Great sense of humor.
Well, he does. And
but it never comes out. It never comes out publicly.
Rarely. Not yeah. never, but very, very rarely.
Yeah.
He is, as with many athletes, very guarded in his public stance. And he, like others who have succeeded in the broadcast field.
And here's the thing. One of the reasons he's going there is because his friend Charles Barkley convinced him of it.
Yeah.
And who is less guarded on the television block than Charles? And the answer is no one. Right. And maybe that will be part of, I expect Barkley to be part of the hockey package. Maybe not every week, but at certain times, I expect Charles to be part of this because he loves the game so much. So maybe that will help Wayne. Maybe that will relax Wayne.
Well, we'll find out soon enough. Much to discuss in terms of more recent developments on the ice as recently as last night. Our friend Glenn Healy will join us when we continue after these messages. As a former target himself, I think our guest would have the opinion that most people have, and that is that goaltending is what really counts in the postseason. You can win during the regular season with mediocre goaltending, I think. I don't think you can win a Stanley Cup with mediocre goaltending. Glenn Healy joins us. You're the absolute wrong person to ask this question of because of your history. But
what does that mean? What history?
Well,
I'm waiting.
Goaltenders defend goaltenders. That's what happens. It's an inevitability. To a goaltender, no position is more important, not just in hockey, in any sport, and probably in any endeavor in life itself. A goaltender is more important than the president of the United States.
You never heard Healy work on television. He didn't. He never defended anybody.
Well,
am I right, Glenn?
I'm not on TV. Figure that one.
That tells you about everything you need to know about him. Not to mention you and I. So, is it about goaltending? Can you win a Stanley Cup without good goaltending?
You know, there's two a tale of two cities. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take you back to when I was playing with Curtis Joseph, and Curtis and I would sit close to each other on the plane, right side by side. I would have Corey Cross beside me. I'd be playing my electronic bagpipe tenor. Corey Cross, he had this war book that was about this thick that he would read, but he would only get through two pages and then fall asleep. I joke with him all the time that, are you through the book yet, 20 years after you're retired? Like, you're done. And then Curtis would read about horse racing and semen in horses and what makes a good horse. And so here we are, these two goalies. I'm playing the bagpipes. He's reading about semen, and I'm thinking, do the fans know we're doing this? Like, really? They know we're doing this? But what would come out after we played the Ottawa Senators, which were a really good team, and we beat them the number of years in a row, is they would have zone time. And you'd look back on the sheet, and the Ottawa Senators would have been in our zone, and I'm no exaggeration, for like 43 minutes of the game.
Sure.
And wow. I'm looking at the numbers. I'm going, Cooch, like, you were it tonight, buddy. Like, I don't know. When he ran into Magoo, the referee, and I thought that I might have to play, I was like, we're doomed. We're done. Yeah. So Bobcat, yeah, you're right. And so, yes, that was everything for the reason we beat the Ottawa Senators. They could look at the, you know, Shane Corson was checking Alexi Yashin. Really? Bullshit. No, that's not the case, right? It was Curtis Joseph checking the whole Ottawa Senators team. He was that good. And that's why we won. Mike Richter, when we won the Cup in 94, his penalty shot save on Pavel Bure, that was a series right there. Mm-hmm. One moment in time. That was the series. And so yes, I believe it is a factor. And then I'll take you back to the time when Philadelphia was playing the Chicago Blackhawks.
I was going to say.
And it was like, okay, first save wins. That's right. The way it was in that series, right? You had a guy like Michael Layton, who I think he got picked up on waivers for the cost of a Pinto, right? And so, like, it was dirt cheap to pick him up. And then, you know, it just that the goaltending wasn't that serious. But I don't think in today's game that – and I all the way through, you know, whether it's the, you know, junior B goalie that won when the Montreal Canadiens.
No, the junior B goalie didn't win. That was the problem.
Well, exactly. But that whole story, it's goaltending is the story in the playoffs.
So that 2010 Stanley Cup ended up being Michael Layton versus Antti Niemi. And Antti, it was just a last shot would win. Right. And it did.
But it was more first save would win, Johnny. Okay. Last shot would win. First save would win. But it was a kind of a crazy series. And but especially today, like, you know, I don't know how these guys are playing in empty buildings and there's no emotion. I can remember my first game when he played against Calgary in the playoffs, and you know, you come out of the dressing room in Calgary and it's a hard left, and then it's about a 40-foot walk to a hard right. And then Bobcat, trust me, you have to duck your head to get under. There's a
not possible
that protects you from the fans throwing beer on you. And then out you go, and there's the sea of red, everybody wearing red. And I looked at that and I thought, it ain't not going to be a good first period.
Was that 89 with the Kings?
Yeah. And you know, Calgary won the cup, right?
Yeah.
But just that whole flavor of playoffs and just all the stuff that goes around with it, and Maple Leaf Square and what goes on with that energy. So to get disinterested, even as an NHL player, it is beyond goaltending. It's that emotion of winning and that grasp of where it comes out of your hand after like 3 days, you know, like, hey, 2 days ago, we were looking at this Montreal Toronto series saying it's even up. It's jump ball.
And no now chance.
I'm going, okay, go jump into the lake because you're done. It's over. And so it is a different world today just based on COVID than it was when you had the whiteout. You went to Winnipeg and it was an amazing, amazing feat to sit there and look at this and go, wow, it's going to be tough to win in this.
I tell you what, it must be hard for the players on Canadian teams right now. That I know they don't follow very many other series because they're in tune with what's going on in their own series. But even to go back to their hotel rooms like the Maple Leafs would have done last night, or when they come home, they turn the TV on and see 14,000 people in Raleigh last night. And it was berserk.
Noisy.
It was crazy. And when Jordan Staal scored that overtime goal, it was, well, you know what the Caniacs are like. They're great hockey fans. Those people in the building, it was a circus. It must be such a it's the ugly stepchild syndrome right now in Canada when it comes to hockey players and playing in front of people.
Well, they all talk to each other, right? This isn't the days of taking a via rail car and not sitting or talking to the other team.
Right,
they're all buddies. They're texting everybody and they're looking at what's going on around the world in the U.S. and thinking that could be me. And, you know, there was a point where, you know, even a team like the Leafs, there was talk of them flying down to the Cleveland Clinic, not leaving the plane, staying on the plane, getting their vaccinations, flying back. I mean, no harm, no foul, right? And that didn't happen. And so they have to be looking at that saying, well, how do these guys in the U.S. get it? And here we are up in Canada, we can't get it. And if we do go to the third round, if we do go further, where are we going to play? You know, you play the game and you have a 2-week hiatus and quarantine people. I mean, my poor neighbor just came back from Florida. They're in their 70s. They've both been double vaccinated. And he's got 3 calls a day from the border, making sure he's at home in his own place that he has lived. No one's lived in the big joke is that he must be a billionaire. He has to be, because a millionaire shovels his driveway and cuts his grass. Me. So gotta be a billionaire, but you know, like, they have to be thinking the same thing that we think as we put our jeans on every day, or like Bobcat does when he fakes with his Halliburton dinner jacket and pretends he's dressing up for our show. So
Oh, I didn't dress up for the show. I dressed up for you, Healy. I didn't know you'd I didn't know you'd look like a gardener today.
Usually it's pajamas, Glenn. Usually it's pajamas.
Can I inject something? Am I nuts? Do we spend most of the regular season talking about the relative merit of each team's forwards and defense, and the conversation about goaltending doesn't really arrive until the playoffs do? Is that perception real or not? Am I the only one who thinks that?
I think you have to ask Johnny that, because, you know, when he worked in TV, he never hired anyone smart enough to actually talk about that position. So everyone who was on TV was too stupid to talk about goaltending.
All I did was hire goaltenders.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at my resume of who did you hire? It goes back to 1984, and it was John Davidson. Then it was Kelly Rudy. Then it was Greg Millen. And then, you know, one day at Maple Leaf Gardens, the Maple Leafs are coming off the ice after a practice, and this little squat goaltender is in line with all his other teammates. And he goes to the door and looks left and makes a beeline for me. And he says, "You're John Shannon." I said, "Yeah." He says, "I want to work. JD said you'd hire me." "Oh, okay, Glenn. How are you doing, sir?" So Glenn got hired. So, I mean, all I've done all my life is hire goaltenders.
He gave me such great advice too, Bob Catholic. I remember the very first show I did, I was injured. I was with the New York Islanders, and I had severed a finger. So that's a really good injury. You can come back from that. No problem. Right.
Eek.
Finger, Steve Thomas, who I love to death, shot, took the top of my finger off. They took it out of my glove, put it in a cup, and I went to NYU to get it sewed back on. Okay. That was fine. No playoffs, no rest of the season. Johnny hires me, and first day I'm on the set at the CBC. Remember, we were in the atrium.
Yeah.
And Ron McLean and myself, and I'm waiting for these pearls of wisdom, right? Like, okay, I don't know how to do TV, so John Shannon's going to tell me how to do TV, right? So I've got a headset on, and that's tough, as you know, right? Someone talking as you're talking. And so I'm making my point, and I can hear this voice from the back, you know, kind of behind the curtain, you know, Wizard of Oz. And he says to me, "Sit the F up." Oh, there we go. There's my words of wisdom.
Yeah, that's you were kind of at 5'7" when you're hunched over, you can barely be seen over the table.
Yeah. And then my very first game with hockey in Canada that I was going to do, where I was going to be an actual broadcaster in the booth, I was doing it with the great Don Whitman, right?
Oh, sure.
Oh, fantastic. And so they've got this big ceremony going on at Edmonton, and I've got the can off, and I set it down, and I'm just enjoying all of this. And then finally, at one point, Don Whitman pushes the mute button and says, "Hey, stupid, put your headset on. Canada can't hear you without that." Oh, sorry. So I put it back on. First whistle, up come the lines. Remember, Johnny, we used to put the lines up.
Yeah.
Curry, all the whole lines. And so, okay, here we go. The Edmonton Oilers lines. And boom, it was off like that, because TV happens fast. I said, "Well, that was a waste of time, unless you were a speed reader. And so just wait, because the next whistle, we're going to waste more of your time and put Calgary's lines up." And
then he wonders why he's not on TV anymore. You know,
executive producer called me, goes, "You can't say that." I said, "Well, I did say that. So what am I going to do now?" It's over, right? But I don't think we put the lines up since that.
Oh, I don't know. Hey, so now that we're on the topic of television, Bob and I talked about before you came on about Wayne signing with Turner, and you know Wayne very well. You've seen Wayne in fine form. I don't think there's a faster mind about the game. I think he's got a great wit. I think he's very analytical. The public's never seen that. What would your advice be to Wayne?
The one thing that strikes me, I mean, other than he's my number one client, right? Because for the alumni, right?
Yeah.
He's if I don't have baby Jesus, then forget about Christmas morning, and he's got to be in the manger. I'm just saying out loud, okay?
Right.
But Gretz remembers everything.
Sure he does.
Oh, he would sit back on the and he would never play cards with the big boys on the front of the plane. Those are the guys playing for big money. And then we had our little group with Adam Graves and Doug Lister and Pat Flatley. Like we're like the poor group. We were playing euchre. I don't even know how to play it anymore. We played it so much, but we were playing for like a buck a hand or something. And Gretz would sit kind of beside us. And then no one would sit beside him because we were intimidated by Wayne, except Darren Langdon. You know, Darren Langdon from Deer Lake, Newfoundland. He'd walk up and go, "Move your feet, you stupid." You know, and there was a bunch of swear words and he would sit down beside him. And Gretz would go into stuff where he could remember. So it was the second period. Shots were like 12-2. Curry, he hadn't scored in three games. And he would just go down this list of just a memory bank that, and I'd be thinking, I don't even know what I had for dinner after the game. Like this is like 6 hours later and I can't remember, but he would remember every. He's a historian of the game. He's right. Got incredible knowledge. He loves the sport. He is, I think it's a breath of fresh air for them. I really believe that it's time for us, like they've done in basketball when Shaq was on and all these big players took part in the broadcast and you sat back and said, were you really going to discount the guy who's got every record in hockey and say he's wrong? Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now get in line. Not a chance. He's going to bring an incredible breath of fresh air, I think, to the U.S. market and tell stories. Everybody has a story. Wayne had a story. You go into his dad's basement. There's a story right there, right? The entire basement is full of it. And he'll be able to tell that. And I don't care about coaching matchups.
Right.
I care about good stick in the lane. And I couldn't care less.
Thank you.
I push mute and go, tell me the story about these guys and how they got there and why they got there and what they're all about. You know, the intangible side of the ledger for Gretz, right? Not the biggest guy, not the fastest guy, not the hardest shot, not all that stuff. But the greatest player ever to play the game. And when he came to LA and we were wearing yellow sweaters, I have it right here to my left. I could pull it down if you want. And
Okay, fine.
but when he came to LA, we went from just a mediocre team that could beat everybody up to one of the best teams in the NHL. And I think he'll take that broadcast there. And I think US market is ready for it. I am done with the guy between the benches telling me where players are from and where they play junior. I don't care.
Me too.
So I guess we went from the hair being departed to now we got Gretz who's parted. So we're in a much better space. And you can read between the lines with all that stuff.
Glenn Healy is with us. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and chat some more about.
Did we speak there, Bob? I don't think we spoke. I think we just listened.
I don't remember even starting the show.
I'll give you an award. Here we go. It's the Kick It Up Award.
John. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Glenn Healy, when we come back after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, I can't shut up the other two. Glenn Healy is with us as well. The chief executive officer, president, and bottle washer for the NHL alumni, who's been sucking up to Gretzky in the whole show.
Well, hold on. We had Wayne on 2 weeks ago. You were pretty sucky uppy too.
I didn't suck up at all.
Oh,
since please. Since Gretzky lost his golf tournament.
Yeah, you don't care about him?
I got nothing to do with him. No, I couldn't care less.
Okay, well, when he starts his golf tournament,
what's he going to do? What is he going to do for me? What's he going to do for you? If he can't invite me up to Collingwood for the weekend, the hell
when he starts his golf tournament again, where he's going to get a reminder of this conversation.
Well, he belongs to a pretty fancy golf course out in California. I'm sure Healy, you've been invited out there, have you?
I in fact have. Yes, I.
Was. Yeah. See?
Well, who? By the way, who hasn't?
Ladies and gentlemen, hasn't? Boys and girls.
But that was Mr. McCowan putting both hands and his feet in the air. So
now, mind you, I never I reciprocated because I never invited him up to Goodwood. I don't think Wayne cares, but
when they get a clubhouse. Maybe and a toilet. Maybe you can invite him up, and he can have a glass of water. Before.
There is a washroom in the barn, Glenn.
Oh, okay. Well, fantastic. Wow.
And there's lots of water too.
And
drink it.
It was ironic. Breathe
in it. Do whatever you want. It comes in a little plastic cup. Can we talk about Winnipeg and Edmonton? Because I mean, there was a sort of a segue there because we're chatting earlier about Edmonton.
Well, okay. Before we do that, I want to ask Glenn about. Everybody's makes lots about the Toronto-Montreal rivalry. Is it the best rivalry you've ever been in? Was Toronto-Montreal better than Rangers-Islanders?
No, the Rangers Islanders was beyond even imagination for me. The very first game I played, sitting in the locker room beside my good buddy Pat Flatley, and it's the only time we actually got to sit beside each other, and he wasn't drinking, so we actually made sense, right? And maybe it was the opposite. He could say the same thing about me, but I could hear this thumping noise in the building. I was like, what are they doing? A construction for the game? He goes, no, that's the fans. Fans are in the building. And we would come out, and it would be packed for warm-up, and then we'd go to MSG, you know, one of the best buildings in the planet, and there would be those two guys, one wore number 19 with his Islander sweater, Brian Trotche. Yeah. One had number 40. I don't know who that was, but, and they would stand up in the blue zone, right? Where the blues.
In the end blues, yep.
Yep. And they would stand back to back, 1940, and they would be chased out of the building by 30 people. It was just the most amazing experience to be part of, right? That, and to this day, they still chant. There's a little whistle. It's Pot Van Sucks. They do it at concerts. They do it at baseball games, all from the hit on Anders Hedberg. And Denny will tell you, that was a clean hit, Glenn. I didn't do anything wrong there. I mean, granted, I put him into a hospital, but it was a clean hit. So, but that rivalry was something special. Islander fans will tell you that there are Islander fans because they couldn't get Ranger tickets.
Right.
So I'm an Islander fan. And when I retired, and our bus driver for the Islanders for all those years I played there, he was down in Florida. He was retired. He pulled me aside at a Tampa Bay game and told me, I got to tell you this. I've been wanting to tell you this for a long time. I hate the Islanders. I was always a Ranger fan. He was our bus driver. So, but Toronto, Montreal, I mean, historically, that goes way back.
Sure.
But you know, you're talking 60, 70 lore where the Islander Rangers is real today.
Well, while Shannon sits there and contemplates his navel, I will say this.
Well, you're the host. You're the host.
Well, you interrupted me and to ask you, instead of the talking about the Winnipeg Edmonton series, which was a segue from us discussing Gretzky, you immediately moved to Toronto, Montreal, and the rivalry that isn't nearly what it once was, which is my opinion.
And Healy, what a great conclusion we came to there then.
Well, Healy, do you agree that the Toronto Montreal rivalry historically is relatively insignificant?
I wouldn't say insignificant, no, because I wouldn't say that. Insignificant means it doesn't matter. It matters, like, gosh, you know.
Does it matter to the players? Do the players feel that the way you talked about Islanders Rangers? We could talk about Calgary Edmonton. I think those rivalries are tangible. I just don't think Toronto Montreal holds much weight anymore.
Yeah, I guess you'd have to be a real historian, right? So if we go way back,
yeah, okay,
Montreal Canadiens, they had three center icemen for 16 years, right? You had Backstrom, yeah. You had Béliveau,
and you had Richard.
And you had
Richard. Honoré Richard.
Yeah.
So then there was this little guy playing in. And I always mispronounce this, Rowan Noranda, whatever it may be.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And he wore number 14. And the Montreal Canadiens back then in the draft, they would have had the rights to that team and that player. Right. That player was Dave Keon. So the Montreal Canadiens, okay, he's going to be their fourth center iceman. No, Toronto Maple Leafs bought the team so that they could draft Davey Keon to be the greatest Maple Leaf ever. So, like, if you're looking in those historical terms, yes, like, this rivalry totally matters. But the fact they haven't played together in 42 years, would it be different, Bobcat, if you're watching at the Bell Center and Johnny knows, you wouldn't go on the road, but we did, and that building is full, and the city is full, and the restaurants are full, and the streets are full, and it becomes the rivalry that we all dream about. We would be a different narrative for sure. And when they come back to Toronto at Maple Leaf Square, when it's jammed and the restaurants are like, it's a different story than look at a bunch of signs around the rink and a game that just happens. And you don't really know many of the players because, okay, now I'm going to tune in because it's Toronto, Montreal, and I should pay attention.
The biggest frustration is that over the years, rarely have the two teams been good at the same time.
Yeah.
That's one of the challenges. I mean,
well, just as rarely has either team been good.
Well, I think 93 was the last.
That's a long time ago, pal.
I know. 93 was the last chance they could have played in the Stanley Cup final. And again, you know, Gretzky interfered with that one. So
why did I not get a ring? I mean, because we beat Pittsburgh that year with the Islanders. If Pittsburgh went on to play the Canadiens, they would have throttled them.
You know,
Jagr and Lemieux and Francis and those guys would have taken down that team. Instead, we walked in with, you know, a bunch of guys from the Islanders. There wasn't not one of us is in the Hall of Fame, right? We're all in the Hall of Shame. And we tried to play Montreal. And I looked 200 feet down the ice and there's Patrick Roy. I'm like, oh, I guess I can't make a mistake tonight because he's not going to make one. But if the big joke was there was two parades. When we beat the Pittsburgh Penguins in overtime with David Bullock scoring a goal, they had a parade that night because they had to play us. And it was like, wow, punch your ticket to the finals. And that's exactly what it was. But, you know, you make great points. There hasn't really been a dominant team on either side. And arguably the most dominant team would have been the years we played in Toronto where we were this close to getting to the Stanley Cup final. We could have had New Jersey.
And Montreal was struggling at that point. Montreal really struggled those years.
Could have beat them. Like they're Buffalo. They had no Dominic Hasek. You know, they lose to Dallas. Could we have beat Dallas in the Stanley Cup final? Yes, yes, yes. But we didn't quite get to the dance. And what it could have, should have is just not the way I want to live my life.
So, well, let's address Winnipeg Edmonton.
Oh,
surprise, okay. Shocked, or moderately, or did you expect Winnipeg to be able to bounce back from that late regular season slump and wipe out the Edmonton Oilers?
Well, to me, the Winnipeg Jets have been building for many, many years. Kevin Cheveldayoff, arguably one of the worst defensemen that I played with. Remember that scene from The Fugitive where Harrison Ford leaves the bus and he's trying to run with leg shackles? That was the way Chevy skated, okay? So, but he became a great general manager and assistant general manager, executive in the game. He learned from, you know, the best in Bill Torrey. And he's been building this for a long time. And his thought process is, yes, it can be a great ascent, right? You want to take off fast, but I tell you what, the descent is going to be incredibly fast as well. So he's put these pieces together and it's taken him a while and he's gotten rid of the pieces he doesn't like. And I'm not surprised by it because they're a darn good team, but they just don't get, and this is John Shannon's fault. They would never put Winnipeg on a Saturday night, hockey night in Canada. There's always Toronto, Montreal, that series talked about, of course. Yeah. And so if we had seen them every Saturday at 7 o'clock, you would think different of this team than you probably looked at. And even when you look at that series, you probably don't look at that team the way you should. They're a darn good team. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you start talking like Vezina and championship trophies in our game, and these guys are winning them or they're up for them. And the club, we did the first game back in Winnipeg when the Jets came back.
Yeah.
And I was between the benches and the fans were there right before warmup. And I recall referees came on the ice and the fans gave the referees a standing ovation. Who gives a referee a standing ovation? We don't even need you. Go away. And then when the team came out and there was a lady sitting right behind me, no idea who she was, crying her eyes out.
Right.
She was back. They are a great fan base and Chevy's done a great job. They're a great team. They really are. And that's no disrespect to Edmonton, who have the best player in the game. So no disrespect in any way.
Well, it was quite shocking given the way Winnipeg played late in the year, the fact that Edmonton blew by them. And no less surprising was that the way Edmonton played the last 6 weeks of the regular season.
Yeah.
They played really, really well.
Yeah, but this year, like honestly.
Do you really think this is an aberration?
Yes, this is absolutely. I mean, gosh, to go into Winnipeg and to play a game with their fans is intimidating.
Of course.
to go into Montreal and play with their fans is intimidating. To go in and play amongst a bunch of rink boards and banners, and then you're doing this now, I mean, I'll give these players full credit.
It's 2 years now, Glenn.
That's what I'm saying. To put what they did last year in a bubble, okay, the Royal York is a great hotel. Like, really? Which restaurant do you want to eat at? Subway or the little place downstairs where you can go buy Tinker Toys?
They could use DoorDash. They could have used DoorDash.
There we go. Like, that was hard. And then to do it, okay, we're going to give you a three-hour break, and we're going to do it all again, and we're going to play 56 games in 12 days. And I say this facetiously. It's sure. not accurate, but it's been a hard road for these guys to do this. I give them all the credit in the world. And I give Gary Bettman and Bill Daly credit and Don Fehr for pulling this off. I never thought they'd pull it off. And I would imagine there's a bunch of owners that say, I wish we didn't pull this off, because I want fans in the crowd like we had in Carolina last night. But they pulled it off. And it is emotionally hard to get charged up to play like you would normally play when you have your customary season, right? Which is, we're going to skate in July and August, and we're going to go to camp in September and play our eight stupid exhibition games where we're going to go out and just waste a bunch of time and put a bunch of money for revenue sharing into the kitty, and then let's get at it. And then look forward to that start of the NHL playoffs when everything matters and it's all on the line. It's emotionally different journey than these guys have ever been on.
By the way, I think Winnipeg can beat Toronto. I think they can. I think that's they match up very well against the Maple Leafs.
2 days ago, Montreal thought that. So
yeah,
you know, I mean, really, it's the 2 week war, right? You just never know the emotion that's going to happen in you know, it's gone like sands in your hand in 2 days.
Well, you can make the argument that the skaters, particularly, the forwards specifically, the skaters in general for Toronto are better than Winnipeg's skaters.
Really?
I think so. And you could, I think overall, yes, not by a lot, but by a little. Goaltending was going to be the difference maker. But Campbell has changed, for me, the perception of these matchups, even against Carey Price. He's been good, and he's been good for so long, night after night after night after night, with very few bumps in the road. I think it's an extraordinary story that we're just kind of partway through. Heels, you're nodding.
Well, I want to know his story. Would somebody please tell me his story? Like, did this guy just come down from Mars and we didn't know who he was? Was he traded for 13 guys in junior and we don't know who he was? And where was he, like, in some time capsule and he just appeared out of nowhere? What I love about him is it's that attitude, right? He makes a save, and if he's not tapping every defenseman who's in front of him to defend him, it's incredible to see that, right? He's got this, you know, he's not giving you the Greg Millen stare. You know, when a goal goes in, he's like, you're in my way. Get out of my way. We'd laugh about that because he's not giving you the Glenn Healy stare, because Ed Case Healy when I played. Honestly, he just seems like this, you know, nothing. It's like a duck.
Nothing bugs him.
Comes off.
Yeah. I have never heard more stories about the relationship of a goaltender with his teammates than in the last 6 to 8 weeks with Jack Campbell and his Maple Leaf teammates. I haven't. It's amazing how that whole storyline of he really likes them and they really appreciate him has come to the fore.
Yeah. And, you know, hey, we're pundits, right? We're waiting for the wheels to just fall off the cart. And then there we go. We got him. Yeah, no experience, no this, no that, no. And you know what? He just carries on each day and makes you believe. Well,
He's paid his dues after being a first-round draft pick, Glenn, and he got knocked off the mountain, and he had to rebuild himself. You know, he had to go all the way back to whatever professional leagues existed, and then ended up living in 50 miles from the Staples Center, wanting to play in the National Hockey League, playing in Ontario, California.
Yeah.
And you know, you got a believer in me because I'm a guy from Pickering, Ontario, that lived 50 feet from the nuclear power plant with 8 reactors, never got drafted in any league. So, I mean, when I see these guys make it, I mean, first round pick, oh gosh, you're spoon fed. I love those stories, and I'm glad to see he's doing well. Glad to see the team's doing well, and like that to me is heartfelt. That's a great story.
You ever go back to that little arena in Pickering that has your jersey up? What's the name of that arena?
Don Beer.
Don Beer. That's right.
Yep, it was world famous. We would play there, and I always wondered like why all the dads love to drink Coke. Like, why do they love to drink Coke? You know. Man, my dad's up there in the stands and he's got this big glass of Coke, and that must be the best Coke in the planet. Until I bumped another dad, and I didn't realize he was a mobile liquor store. It was like,
he had the other bottle.
Here we go.
The rum.
And then when we got a little bit older, right, and we were playing and your dad didn't have to watch you in practice and, you know, tie your skates and do all those things. Across the street was a spot of ill repute called the Caballero.
Yes.
You could watch a couple, you know, hey, there was dancing music and there was a little bit of dancing.
Yeah,
and I thought, my gosh, the parents aren't in the stands anymore. Where did they go? Yeah, they were over at the Caballero. Here we go. But phone's up there,
Bob. We gotta go.
Okay.
Quick.
And cut my hair with a ruler. So it's still there. Go to the Don Beer Arena, Caballero. That might not be.
had a young one who used to play there, so I used to go a lot, and I always used to look up at that jersey of that is hanging in the lobby there of you and wonder, boy, they really haven't had very many good players come through here. Healy, we love you, you know that, and we thank you very much for taking some time for us, and we hope you'll do it again down the road. Stay safe and healthy, okay?
Yeah, we're at the finish line. Here we go, last lap in the Coliseum for the Healy family, so we're good.
Glenn Healy, back to wrap it after this. It's McCowan, it's Shannon, and our thanks again to Glenn Healy. Never a dull moment when he's on, is there? Oh,
I think we were supposed to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, we were. Well, you know, I mean, I love Healy, and I will say this. I know that more than a few people have lost their jobs since Rogers and Sportsnet lost their minds, but none, I don't know that there was one that was more shocking than Glenn Healy. He was for me, the reason to watch and to listen. I loved his humor and I loved his quips and I loved the fact that he didn't take himself or the game that seriously. And, I couldn't understand them not renewing him, but I guess
no, they didn't renew him. They dismissed him.
Well, they dismissed him, and it wasn't for cause, was it? To the best of your knowledge?
No. It was for cost. Yeah. COST, cost cutting.
It's
really he was polarizing. Lots of people didn't like him. Yeah, and you can respect that.
Yeah.
But he made you think, and that was why I loved Glenn Healy as a broadcaster. He made you think. He could entertain you. He could anger you. He could do lots of stuff. But at the end of the night, did he make the broadcast better? And the answer is every time he did. Every time he made the broadcast better.
Well, what makes a broadcaster attractive, good, memorable? For most, it's opinion, a willingness to express a point of view that may not be popular, and accept the consequences of presenting that view.
I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it, yeah.
And I mean, obviously, Don Cherry is, you know, you don't have to say much more about what he did, whether you agree with it or not. But Healy was very much like that, too. And I I know I always perked up consciously or subconsciously. I perked up when I heard Healy's voice jump in, because I thought, well, I better pay attention to this because this is going to be something interesting. And almost every time it was. Anyway, our thanks to Heels for joining us, and he'll do it again. 3-1, Leafs lead the Montreal Canadiens. It's over.
Oh no, it's over. Yeah, there's no doubt about it, Bob. I mean, Game 5 back in Toronto. What you saw in Game 4 was the Maple Leafs' depth. You know, Alex Kerfoot was very good. Galchenyuk was excellent. The two old fogies, Thornton and Spezza, contributed.
Yep.
Austin Matthews has become a 200-foot player. You know, it's a really good hockey club.
We will find out soon enough who will face the Winnipeg Jets, and will it be the Toronto Maple Leafs? We'll know that, we assume, shortly. We remind you, if you miss an episode of this program, you can catch it by going to fadoopodcast.com. You can watch, listen to all
of the Gretzky podcast was really good. It was only 2 weeks ago.
That's it for us. See ya. Bye-bye.